The FDA says tomatoes are still the lead suspect, but cilantro, jalapeno peppers, and serrano peppers have been added to the list of possible culprits in the salmonella outbreak that has sickened 943 people, including 10 in Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 8th. The Food and Drug Administration began widening the salmonella probe last week after it was revealed none of the tomato samples it tested were contaminated with salmonella. And even though most restaurants and stores had removed the suspect tomatoes from their shelves last month, more people became sick. The Chicago Department of Health reported several cases of salmonella in people who ate at Mexican restaurants, which prompted the FDA to look at ingredients found with tomatoes, like in salsa or guacamole. We will talk with a guest who says the FDA needs emergency regulations to track or trace produce through the supply chain back to the farm. And we will welcome your questions and concerns about this latest food safety scare. Are you avoiding tomatoes altogether? Are you frustrated with the lack of answers? What do you think the answer is? Caroline Smith DeWall is Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what is this tracking system that you want the FDA to implement?
Well, what we observed is that many, many fruits and vegetables currently being marketed to consumers already carry a sticker or some identifying information. If FDA could just standardize a code, require the growers and packers to use a code that identifies them all the way back to the farm, this would allow consumers to have more confidence, and it would allow FDA to trace products back much faster. Today, products can move into a distribution facility, and they can totally lose in their origin. They can be repacked from one box, which might be from Mexico or Florida, into another box from a different country or a different state. And those that origin information, it's beyond country of origin. It's origin information overall is what's critically important during an outbreak like this.
Yeah. Well, what are those? I mean, we do have stickers on some, so we don't have stickers on all.
The stickers that are on those vegetables today and fruits are voluntary for the industry. Now, by the end of this year, a new law should go into effect on country of origin labeling, which will make them a requirement for more and more of the produce. But what we're saying is, let's just move forward and make identifying information and this standardized code a requirement for everybody. They can use their existing stickers or the existing systems they use today. They'll just have a new code that can be embedded into it and that can add on to their own traceability system.
Yeah, and how would this help right now in the FDA's investigation into the salmonella outbreak?
This outbreak is made much more complicated by the fact that FDA can lose the trail. This is not unlike a criminal investigation that we see, you know, every week on TV. There's, you know, good examples of criminal investigations and how they have to follow leads. But if FDA gets back to a distribution facility that uses this practice of repacking produce, then FDA can lose the trail right there. If those packers and repackers are required to keep either stickers on the produce or keep the produce in original marked boxes with these codes, then FDA would have a much easier time tracking it all the way back to the farm. I can't criticize the agency today for the fact that they cannot get back to the farm because the agency simply doesn't have the tools that it needs to do that.
Yeah. But you think if this was implemented, say, after the spinach outbreak, that we wouldn't have as hard a time right now figuring out what's going on?
That's right. Mm-hmm. CSPI actually petitioned FDA following the spinach outbreak to put in place a couple of requirements. One was that all growers and packers and processors of fruits and vegetables should have a written food safety plan. That's already a requirement for the beef industry and the poultry industry and the seafood industries. And we think these written plans are really an important step in ensuring that they are managing the food safety hazards on the farm. So number one was the written plan. And as part of that plan, they had to outline a traceability system. Well, we've gone one step farther here, and we think FDA should actually mandate a code it's the same sequence of numbers. For example, for each grower, of course, the numbers would be different to identify the growers, but it would. It doesn't have to be a number that the consumer can read, but it should be a number that FDA can read easily.
We are talking with a guest who says the FDA needs to implement emergency regulations to track produce back to the farm in light of the salmonella outbreak that is going on right now. 943 people or so sickened in this country from eating tomatoes or maybe jalapeno peppers or maybe cilantro. The FDA has widened its investigation beyond tomatoes now. We welcome your thoughts, your concerns, your questions. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 8th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Parents are increasingly involved in their children's lives, and after 5, Ben and his guest will discuss the effect of excessive parenting on children. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. We are talking about the salmonella outbreak in this country. It's been hitchhiking in our produce with 10 confirmed cases here in Wisconsin, more than 940 nationwide, one in Canada. That person apparently was in the U.S. We are talking with a guest who says this outbreak is a wake-up call to change the way the FDA and farms do business. Center for Science in the Public Interest wants the FDA to implement emergency regulations to track or trace produce through the supply chain back to the farm. Is this a good idea? Is this what's needed? What's the answer? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Caroline Smith-DeWall is the Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. And before we go to the phones, Ms. Smith-DeWall, you say you can't criticize the FDA and how it's investigating the salmonella outbreak. It's doing all it can.
These investigations are extraordinarily difficult. We've been monitoring foodborne illness outbreaks and have over 16 years of data. And what we've observed with produce outbreaks is they tend to be larger. The outbreaks tend to have more people who get sick, and we believe that this is because, in fact, it becomes really hard for them to identify the food. Salmonella is normally associated with poultry or even meat mm-hmm. products. It lives in the intestinal tract of warm-blooded animals or birds, and it's not common in a farm field. It has to arrive there on some carrier. Now, that carrier could be manure, it could be water. It could even be humans. So we need to figure out how the pathogen is arriving. But in looking at the data that we've analyzed, and we've analyzed over 700 outbreaks from produce, in looking at this data, we have identified a couple of things that we think FDA could could require in these food safety plans. One is control of manure. How is manure applied? Is it applied safely on the farm fields? Secondly is the use of water, making sure that the water for irrigation and washing is clean and pathogen-free. And another step they need to take is simply assuring that the farm workers, all the farm workers, have sanitation and hygiene facilities and hand-washing facilities. No one should be touching produce that we're going to eat unless their hands are very clean.
Yeah.
So these are simple steps. It's not rocket science. They don't need to go in and actually figure out the exact mechanism where the pathogen is attaching. And you'll hear some of the scientists over at FDA saying, well, we can't do a regulation because we don't know this mechanism. But what we need to know is the carriers, how the pathogens get onto the produce, and using, you know, really some basic data that we have, we think FDA has the ability to do that.
Let's take some calls. Ralph and Barron is with us first. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to call attention to facts that are widely known among the scientific community and I think less widely known among the food processing and distributing agencies, and that is that ionizing radiation using a source such as cobalt-60 is 100% effective in killing the salmonella organisms, not just on tomatoes, but on spinach and in meats. And I think the principal barrier in wide use of the ionizing radiation is the irrational fear of harmful effects of the radiation. I think it's very important to understand the economic loss that's associated with the enormous enormous amounts of healthy food that is not contaminated. You certainly cited the facts that very few people actually get ill from this by this mechanism. And I'm certainly in favor of preventing all of those illnesses, but the mechanisms being suggested, that is a massive investigation and system and that would lead to identifying the source, is it's not unscientific, but it's terribly expensive and inefficient. There are meat processors, several in the state of Minnesota, who radiate all of their ground meat products. Some irradiate all of their meat products when they've been packaged, so that subsequent handling between the packaging and the consumer opening the package doesn't contaminate the meat. So
I would urge a
powerful advocacy of irradiation, not just for tomatoes, but for fresh fruits and vegetables in general, as the rational and effective available method for dealing with this problem.
All right. Just irradiate the tomatoes, Caroline?
Well, you know, irradiation certainly is one tool that's available. It doesn't work for all produce, and it doesn't work for all pathogens, but it probably would help with some of these problems. The bottom line, though, is that there are lots of technologies out there, and irradiation proponents will tout that. Other proponents will tout other things. Your caller has said that, you know, traceability is going to be very costly. Well, we think traceability is already being used widely. It's a voluntary system. The key is to get a system that's compatible, that FDA can read, that FDA understands the coding. And this can be used alongside all the other traceability systems and labeling systems that are currently in use. I mean, we went out shopping last week and took our findings to the National Press Club, and we had hundreds, literally hundreds, of pieces of fruits and vegetables, all of which carried a sticker or a label or a hang tag telling people information. Sometimes it was just a little sticker with a barcode, but that's really all you need. So we think the systems are in use, and to require a standard code that FDA can actually use in these outbreaks would be very efficient and cost efficient as well.
Yeah. Does the Center for Science and the Public Interest have a position on the safety of irradiating food?
Well, irradiation, we steer away from taking positions on, you know, technological solutions in the sense that there are many technologies out there. And if I endorse one technology, then I will spend my time endorsing a zillion technologies. The bottom, we do not oppose irradiation, but we also recognize its limitations. It's not useful for all foods. Some foods may, in fact, suffer from being irradiated. The quality of the food will deteriorate. But secondly, irradiation doesn't kill all pathogens. It's quite good for some of the bacterial pathogens, but when it comes to viruses, you'd need too much irradiation, and it would really destroy the quality of the food. So we have to... we have to really take steps that can prevent the products from becoming contaminated. In reviewing our data, and this is data that comes from CDC and the states on outbreaks that where both foods and pathogens are identified as part of the investigation. And in reviewing our data, about two-thirds, not two-thirds, but one-third or more of the outbreaks are linked to a virus called norovirus, which is transferred from infected humans. Mm-hmm. And that would not be solved by irradiating the produce. So I agree with your caller that the cost of this outbreak and these public announcements is huge, not only for the consumers who have become ill, and many, over 100 have been hospitalized so far, but also for the industries involved. So prevention is the best solution, and that's in the written plans we've been advocating. And the next best thing is when it happens, being able to trace it quickly. So those are the proposals we're making, and we really hope FDA moves quickly, even in developing emergency steps to move these ideas forward. Yeah.
We had a caller who said if people would just wash their fruits and vegetables, we wouldn't be seeing this. Is that right?
No, unfortunately. If there were easy solutions, they wouldn't leave them just to consumers. Mm. The industry themselves would wash it. The reason washing doesn't always work is that for some produce, it actually can move the pathogen further into a crevice or especially for berries. Washing is very important. Let me be clear. Washing your produce is very important, but it is not fail-safe. The other thing, and this is very interesting science.
We have only 30 seconds before a news break, though.
I'm sorry. Sometimes it contaminates internally, and I can tell you more about that when we come back.
Yeah, let's do that. We are talking with Caroline Smith-DeWall, Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, talking about the Salmonella outbreak, which has been linked to tomatoes, but not absolutely confirmed to be caused by tomatoes. The FDA is widening its probe and is testing things like cilantro and jalapeno peppers now. We are talking about what's needed to prevent these types of outbreaks in the future, and we welcome your thoughts and questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The FDA has widened its investigation for the source of the current salmonella outbreak beyond tomatoes and is now testing cilantro, jalapeno peppers, and serrano peppers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday, July the 8th. The FDA is widening its probe because more people have become sick after most of the suspected tomatoes were removed from the market. So now they are, the FDA, testing foods that are served with tomatoes, like cilantro and jalapeno peppers. This also after the Chicago Public Health Department said several people became sick after eating at Mexican restaurants. We're talking with a guest about this outbreak and what the FDA needs to do to prevent future outbreaks. The guest says that the FDA needs to implement emergency regulations to trace produce through the supply chain and back to the farm. And we welcome your thoughts and questions. We wonder if you're avoiding tomatoes altogether now, if you're concerned about the ability of our government to keep our food supply safe. What do you think ought to be done? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Caroline Smith DeWall, Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. We were talking about a caller's suggestion before the news that people just needed to wash fruits and vegetables better, and this wouldn't happen. You were saying that often the salmonella is actually internal in the food.
Yeah, it's there are some interesting studies that have shown, especially with tomatoes, but I think this also goes to some other produce items as well, that the produce can actually take the pathogen up internally. That can occur through washing of the produce. For example, if the tomatoes are a different temperature than the wash water, sometimes it'll actually absorb water through the stem area. And at that point, the pathogen is distributed through the meat of the tomato. No amount of washing is going to get rid of that. But it can also happen, I've heard also with some leafy green vegetables, sometimes it can be taken up through the roots. So we have to just be aware that these pathogens are living organisms. They have the ability to actually get places. It's not just surface contamination that we have to worry about. Mm-hmm. So washing, again, if washing was the solution, the industry would be implementing it, not even relying on consumers. But we do recommend that people wash their fruits and vegetables. The best advice is to do it under running water. It can be cold water. That's fine. The key is that if you soak it, the pathogens won't dislodge as easily as if they're actually under running water.
Our next caller is Ruth in Madison. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I've noticed as I drive past farm fields and I see people out there working that very, very seldom do I see a porta potty or anything that they might use for their convenience there. And I know that by law, all workers in the state of Wisconsin are entitled to a 15-minute break per half shift, except state employees and farm workers, and state employees get their breaks by contract, and I'm quite sure that there aren't too many unionized farm workers who get even 15-minute breaks. And I'll tell you, if I was being paid by the pound and not by the hour, you know, believe me, if I had to go, I would just go right where I was and continue working without the hand washing facilities. And even if they did, you know, when you think about those porta pots, if they use the hand sanitizer, if their hands are already covered with dirt, possibly manure, possibly chemicals, how is that hand sanitizer supposed to work? They really need to wash their hands, you know, in some copious amounts of water. And yet, I can take you to one farm field in the Madison area that I've seen with a porta pot in the middle of it, but the rest of them, you know, there's nothing to be seen. And even when you see people, you don't see a truck with a mounted porta pot or hand washing facilities. So I just don't know how you would even begin to police that.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, that is a great issue, and it is not only an issue of food safety, though it is very much an issue of food safety. It's also an issue of human rights. We believe that in ensuring that farm workers have the facilities they need, that they're close at hand, and that management is actually monitoring that they're being used, but also that the hands are being washed. I mean, hands are a great way to transmit bacteria. So we need to make sure that hands are washed in the farm fields, in the schoolrooms, in the kitchens, I mean, in the restaurants, everywhere. Hand washing is a critical, critical issue here. So we are with you 100% in terms of getting those facilities in place and getting hand washing facilities. Now, your issue went to how to police this. This is where we think that the written plan of the farmer becomes very important. The farmer knows their farm better than anybody else. No regulatory agency should or could tell the farmer what the weather conditions, the environmental conditions on the farm. The farmer knows that stuff much better than anybody here in Washington or even in Madison would know it. So it's critically important that the farmer be in control. However, having a written plan that describes issues like farm worker sanitation and hygiene and what the farmer is planning to do to make sure that he meets that requirement, because it is a food safety requirement. The plan can be checked. If you've got a plan, if a government inspector is stopping by the farm and the plan says, you know, we will have porta potties every, you know, quarter mile or whatever. A quarter mile might even be too much, but porta potties, and we will make sure they're being used. They can actually go out and check. They can actually, that's something they can visually see on a farm inspection. So again, the written plan's important, but the ability to verify that the plan is being implemented is also critically important.
Thank you very much, Ruth, for the call. Julia in Wanakee is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning. One thing that struck me as I heard all of the announcements about tomatoes that are okay to eat, such as tomatoes with the vines attached and, you know, different shapes and stuff of tomatoes, that there was never any mention made of organic tomatoes. And I know that being organic doesn't protect you from pathogens, but I just thought it was interesting because it's definitely a subcategory of the market.
Yeah, the FDA is still warning people to avoid raw red plum, red Roma, or round red tomatoes, or any products containing them. It says the FDA, it is safe to eat grape tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, and tomatoes sold with the vines still attached.
The vines on, yeah,
yeah.
But you know,
but it doesn't say anything about organic.
I'm really skeptical that any of these restaurants that were making salsa and such were using organic tomatoes. And I'm also just the cynic in me thinks that if any of the restaurants were, you know, a high-end San Francisco restaurant using organic tomatoes, that would have been the headline. Mm. Organic tomatoes with salmonella.
Yeah. Caroline, anything about
Let me first tell you that your caller has a great point. Mm. The organic tomatoes actually have more requirements when it comes to the use of manure than traditionally grown tomatoes. So organic tomatoes, because organic farmers are used to using manure, it's a common soil constituent and a soil additive, there are actually rules. If you are USDA certified organic, you have to follow rules for the use of manure. Those rules do not apply to traditional farmers. So in a way, the organic industry is already grappling with this problem and has put standards in place that frankly we think should apply to the industry overall. The organic, or your caller's also right in the sense that what organic really gives you is a reduced or minimal residue level for pesticides and chemical additives. The organic label is designed to control those kinds of additives, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's safer or less safe from pathogens. In fact, we can't tell from the data we have, which is a lot of data, we can't tell whether organic is safer or non-organic. We can't tell if domestically grown is safer or foreign grown is safer. That kind of data just doesn't really exist today. But we do know that the organic industry is living under better rules when it comes to the use of manure than the traditional farmers.
We're talking with Caroline Smith-DeWall, Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, about what the FDA should do to prevent the type of salmonella outbreak we're battling today. The FDA says tomatoes are still the lead suspect, but cilantro, jalapeno peppers, and serrano peppers have been added to the list of possible culprits in the outbreak that has sickened more than 940 people nationwide, including 10 in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have questions or concerns, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest says that the FDA needs to implement emergency regulations to track produce back to the farm, among other things. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's 11 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 8th. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, presidential candidates Barack Obama and John McCain are focusing on the economy this week and touting their economic plans. We'll talk about both of them with our guest political analyst coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about the salmonella outbreak and wondering what needs to be done to prevent these types of outbreaks in the future, and what needs to be done to figure out what's going on right now. Caroline, is there, what do you make of, tomatoes are the culprit, no wait, maybe cilantro, jalapeno peppers, serrano peppers might be involved. Why is it so hard for the FDA to nail this one down?
You know, it's amazing, Joy, the number of outbreaks that are investigated, and first of all, let's start. The outbreak investigation starts at the local public health level, mm-hmm. and it moves up to the states, and sometimes with large outbreaks, it moves to CDC. So investigations really are a function of state and local public health systems. Many of these outbreaks, in fact, the majority of outbreaks reported to CDC every year, do not have either an identified food or an identified pathogen. And the reason I know this is because CSPI takes the data that CDC collects from the states and they publish on their website, and we organize it, we use it for our database where we're looking over long-term trends in outbreak data. And we can't use over half of the outbreaks that are reported to CDC every year because they're not fully investigated. So you've got to, this outbreak is not the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. It's not that all the outbreaks or all the other outbreaks, they can find the food quickly. The reality is the fact that they've gotten this far and they've narrowed it down actually means they're doing better than most of the investigations out there. But it still isn't very satisfactory if we don't know if we're to avoid the tomatoes or the jalapeno or the cilantro or what other pathogens or products may be out there that could be contaminated. So the investigation itself is very important. And it's got to be coordinated between all these different state agencies. This is an example of where, in some ways, the federal and state system doesn't work all that well, because when an outbreak like this occurs, it's not always clear who's in charge. Is it the state with the largest number of illnesses? Usually those states have done a lot of work on the investigation, and they don't want the federal government to come in and say, hey, we're here now, we're in charge. And yet, when you're coordinating between 30 states or even more states for this major investigation, you really do need a federal agency who is in charge. So in that way, the investigation is really done by the state and local governments in coordination with CDC. And so if they can't identify the food, it's really happening at that level. Now, what FDA's job is to do, FDA is the regulatory agency for the foods involved. What their job is to go out and test food products. With the spinach outbreak, that was the absolute gold standard for how an investigation like this could proceed. they identified, they linked the human cases of illness to bags of spinach, back to a processing plant, and all the way to a farm field. That's such a rare event mm-hmm. in how these investigations yeah. occur.
Tom in Camp Douglas is with us now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, I just kind of want to get back to the point that, you know, we're kind of persecuting vegetables here, but it's my understanding that the salmonella would originate from an animal-based, and so therefore likely possibly a fertilizer, especially with people getting off of petroleum-based fertilizers and more people going organic using animal-based fertilizers. But then also, couldn't it be a chance that the salmonella could have occurred on the table with the knife that was used to cut the chicken or what have you? So, I mean, this could happen quite easily, I would think.
You know, we always talk about food safety as a farm-to-table continuum. Mm-hmm. And I think, Tom, you've brought that out very, very well. The salmonella would originate in an animal or a bird. And how it gets on the farm field is it's in part based on practices of the farmer, the use of manure, the use of water. But it also could enter at the processing plant where the products might be washed. Mm-hmm. It could potentially be a cross-contamination problem in a distribution house. You know, we had an example, and this is not a produce example, but of a breakfast cereal where at the point where vitamins were being applied to a fully cooked oat cereal, that the salmonella got into a sprayer and contaminated a lot of breakfast cereals. So we have, you know, and you can also spread salmonella in your kitchen through the use of a knife or a plate that had a raw ingredient, mm-hmm. and you're using it on an ingredient that's either fully cooked or that you'll eat raw, like lettuce. For this outbreak, Tom, this is not happening in people's kitchens. Mm-hmm. It is the exact same strain of bacteria. That's one way we know that. So it's got to originate earlier in the chain, and then it's being distributed through. As the food itself is distributed, the bacteria is also traveling. So those are the things that, I mean, there are clues that tell us that it has to have occurred earlier than the kitchen. But where exactly the contamination has occurred, it could be at any of those points. So the key is you cannot exempt the farmers from responsibility, which we've largely done up until these last few years of outbreaks. You know, in the past, it's like, well, the farmers don't have to worry about food safety because we'll worry about it further up the food chain and up the production chain. The reality is farmers are part of the food chain and part of the food safety chain, and it's critically important that they start the food safety assurances and that they move through the distribution and processing chains. And then we have to educate consumers continuously about their role.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, for the call. Stephen Johnson Creek is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, I was just wondering about, the injection of waste products into the soil at the farmer's fields. Does that affect the produce, and is produce grown on those fields? For example, what I notice in our area is that the waste plant takes their tractor out and that, and they fill up the tank and they inject the human waste from the sewage plants into the farmer's field.
Does that happen all over the place, Caroline?
The application of manure, I grew up in Vermont, and you could always smell when the manure was being applied to the farm field.
It sounds like he's talking about
the use of human sewage
waste.
Water yeah. as mm-hmm. well. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is the use of manure in soil is actually a good use. It's healthy for the soil, mm-hmm. but the use of human sewage is much more controversial. There are some places where it's been pelletized and it's being used in different forms, but it's this is not a common practice that sewage, mm-hmm. human sewage, would be applied to soil.
Yeah. So any words of wisdom for those of us right now who love our tomatoes and our salsa and that sort of thing? What, should we wait this out, or what do you think we should do?
Well, you know, what's frustrating to me is this is the season that we all love to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, I think this does give a vote to growing our own and, you know, buying locally grown, buying directly from farmers that we may know and see every day. But, you know, the reality is these outbreaks are going to happen. Mm-hmm. We need to get better tools in the hands of our federal officials who have to manage those outbreaks. And we need to fund the public health agencies at the federal, state, and local level who do these investigations.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Caroline Smith-DeWall, Director of Food Safety at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Thanks as well to Karen Prager and Cynthia Schuster. And thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.